Welcome to the Memory Distillery, everyone. I'm Anthony Brunieri.
And I'm John Deck. And each week, we will malt, mash, ferment, and distill our way through the spirits of our past in the form of long-loved movies.
And on this week's episode...
Imagine you're a deer. You're prancing along. You get thirsty. You spot a little brook. You put your little deer lips down to the cool, clear water. Bam! A fucking bullet rips off part of your head. Your brains are laying on the ground in little bloody pieces. Now I ask you, would you give a fuck what kind of pants the son of a bitch who shot you was wearing?
That's right. We're watching My Cousin Vinny from 1992, directed by Jonathan Lynn. And everyone, please, welcome to the Memory Distillery, our special guest, Beth Colombo.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
That was quite an entrance. It was really hard for me not to laugh during the, that was amazing.
It was pretty incredible. It's, I think, and our audience can confirm this, but the best impression we've ever had on the show.
Whoa! Well, thank you. It's an
honor. I don't know, Anthony, if you're remembering that one time that I did that really good Sean Connery impersonation.
As opposed to Sean Connery impressions that you do.
It's up and down, but we'll just say for the sake of argument to be kind to our guests that it was just happens to be the best we've had. So
sure, so, why yeah. not?
Yeah. I'd like to thank the Academy, my mom, my dad.
Absolutely. You can thank the entire your producers and directors. Great.
Thank
and all
you guys.
That stuff.
I appreciate it. Exactly, so, Anthony and John. First and foremost.
We're very happy to have you on the show, Beth. And as we've been chatting a bit leading up to this, I asked you for some ideas on movies that you know you'd love to kind of get into to talk about, and you brought up My Cousin Vinny, and we were both just like, yeah, absolutely. And so I just want to hear straight from you, like, what do you remember about the movie? How do you feel about it?
Well, yeah, this is obviously one I love. That's why I suggested it. And I think part of it, a little personal background, I think part of it is growing up in a New Jersey suburb of New York City. So certainly the fact that Mona Lisa Vito and Vinny could be, you know, people I grew up around or family members in some cases helps, I'm sure. And it's funny because you said the movie came out in 92. So I was 10, and I'm sure my parents probably didn't let me see this movie when I was 10, but it feels like I've known about it forever. You know, it's one of those movies for me. And I think one of the big things, which gets to my fabulous intro, is I think it's such a quotable movie. Like, there's just so many.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, great, yeah. You know, quotes that you find yourself saying. So that's one of the big, you know, kind of memories to me is all these various quotes. And it's just so funny.
Yeah. For sure. Go ahead, John.
I was going to just say that it's been a long time since I've seen this movie. And I only have positive memories. Yeah, that's a word. Memories of the movie. Just the overall
impressions.
I would hope that
memories is a word. It's part of our fucking podcast.
Well,
is distillery a word?
It sure is.
I think it has some. That means movies. I don't know.
Sure.
This isn't a dictionary podcast. Anyway. Yeah, like the memories I have of it are, well, they're kind of bare. Like, I remember the overall plot and some of the lines in it being funny and, you know, something about Utes. But, yeah. So, like, I'm really excited to watch again because it's one of those movies that it's been long enough that it's going to feel kind of fresh and new to me. But at the same time, just having a total different frame of reference now that I'm no longer a kid watching it. And, you know, I'm pretty excited to see what we uncover.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to in the same boat as you, John. I think I saw this last, like, when I was staying in a hotel or something like that, and it was on the TV, and I was just kind of, like, tuning in and out as I was getting dressed or something like that. Like, it wasn't something that I was super tuned into, but I remember, like, the parts that I was watching and like thinking back to when I was a kid seeing this and going, oh yeah, that was pretty funny. Yeah, that was pretty funny. And like, I have are really, you know, like good memories of this movie, like enjoyable memories of this movie, and not necessarily thinking that it was, you know, poorly made or corny or anything like that. Like I remember thinking that this was just a fun movie to watch. And it's funny you say that as a 10-year-old, you don't think your parents would let you watch it, Beth, because I'm pretty sure I saw this shortly after it came out. I don't know that I saw it in the theater, but I was 10 right around the time that this came out. And I'm pretty sure I saw it like close to that time, like maybe once it came out on VHS or something.
VHS.
Like that.
When
my aunt rented it, or my mom rented it or something like that. But yeah, like I've watched this since it came out, and it's probably every 4 or 5 years, and it's every time it's funny. So
yeah, it's fortunately on TV all the time.
As the senior member of our trio, I was old enough to watch the movie when it came out. So and I could drive, so that was fun. No,
nice.
So yeah, but Beth, we're going to rely on you to be our resident expert, who is a little more familiar. And because I still want to see, once we rewatch it here for Anthony and I, it's going to be like revisiting something we haven't seen for, you know, 20 plus years or however long. And I'm not necessarily accusing you of watching it every other week, but you know, you'll provide more context for it of someone who, you know, has thought about it more recently than we have. And overall, I don't know. I'm excited. I think we should just kind of dive right into it.
Yeah. I think it's going to be really fun.
Yeah, I do too. So with that in mind, we're going to go and do that. So if you guys want to watch along with us, it's streaming on Stars right now. Otherwise, you can get it all the regular digital rental outlets that you would normally get at Google Play or Apple Pod, you know, or Apple, what is it, iTunes, whatever it is, you know where to find it. And when we come back, we are watching My Cousin Vinny. Beth, John, are you ready?
Ready.
Yes.
Let's do it.
Holy shit! You got it, honey! You did it! The case cracker! Me in the shower! Ha ha! I love this!
Welcome back, everyone! We just got done watching My Cousin Vinny. Beth, is it everything you remember it to be?
Yeah, although I have to thank you guys, because I thought after seeing this movie so many times, it would just be like, what am I going to talk about? I've seen it so many. But I did see some new stuff because I was watching it to talk about it. So thank you for having me on to talk about it.
Always an educational experience doing these episodes. Yeah. So.
It's the name of the key.
Love it.
So what's one thing that you learned from this outing as opposed to the previous 40 or 50 times that you've watched it?
Yeah, that's about accurate. One thing I noticed is how much, because we talked about this, I think, last time, that this movie is on TV all the time. So I never really thought of the fact that I don't know if I've actually sat down and watched this whole movie for real in a really long time, because I would turn it on and I'd do stuff. So it was really, it was really cool to just sit down and focus on it. And one thing that I always laughed at when I watched it before, but then I started to use the film, television, and theater degree that I paid probably too much money for. And I went like, whoa, one of the things that makes this movie so funny is just the misunderstandings. And right almost immediately off the bat with, by the way, I have a huge crush on Ralph Macchio, so let's talk about him. But right off the bat with Billy and I Shot the Clerk. I Shot the Clerk, and you're like, no!
I Shot the Clerk.
Amazing. And then one of my favorite parts of the movie, and it made me laugh this time, which I was like, how does it still make me laugh? But Vinny and Stan in jail, when Stan thinks Vinny is the new inmate, I was dying. But that's another one where, like, totally a misunderstanding. So just, I feel like that's part of what makes the film such a classic comedy film, is just people totally miscuing, no idea what the other one's talking about. Brilliant writing, brilliant acting, and it's just so funny.
Oh, and all the chemistry is there too. Like, even in that scene in the prison cell when Vinny shows up and the two of them are going back and forth, it's never like these two don't belong acting together. Right. These two are like, they were meant to do that scene together.
Yeah, so perfect. You're so right. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I just think it's great. Another thing that I noticed that I guess kind of goes with what you just said, so that was a perfect transition, thank you so much, is the relationships, because there's so many in the movie that are – so pivotal. And to your point, the chemistry, you know, because we know we've all seen films where the relationships maybe were supposed to matter, but the chemistry falls apart and it doesn't matter. But in this film, I mean, obviously the main one is Mona Lisa and Vinny. And I noticed watching it this time how much she's really key to his success. She's a huge part of it. And their dynamic of, I feel like it's so kind of a stereotypical New York couple, the way that they really get a kick out of challenging each other and fighting, but not really, it's play fighting. And that those are some of the really funny and also kind of touching in a funny way parts of the movie too. And all of those relationships in it, I think, are give it heart underneath the fact that it's just a really funny film.
Which I thought was hard to do with Vinny and Mona Lisa, because they're 20 years apart in age. Yes. So like to have that sort of chemistry, even just acting, mm-hmm. is not an easy thing to do. No. So like big kudos to them. John, are you still with us?
I am. I thought I would just bask in the glory of hearing other voices than my own.
It's like listening to a podcast in real time.
Yeah, I always thought it would be fun to listen to a podcast. And that was right. This is a ball.
It's a live podcast for John. Do you have your popcorn, John?
I wish. No, I mean, I appreciate everything you guys are saying are right along the lines of what I was thinking in this. I mean, there is just absolutely no doubt whatsoever in my mind that this movie, its success, its humor, its draw, like, there are great parts here and there, but for me, the sheer magnetism of Marissa Tomei as Lisa in this part, like her delivery, her lines, she's just this force of nature, and they even leak it into the movie where everyone's just falling in love with her when they get exposed to her for a little while, and so just having that kind of presence in the movie, and you know, it's like, I think there was probably at the time a lot of question marks as to why, you know, she won an Academy Award for a movie that's not like A level, A class, you know, Academy Award bait. But I think it's well deserved in a bunch of funny performances and a bunch of people who had some great moments. She was just stellar throughout the whole thing. So I had a lot of fun with that.
No, yeah. And like what you just said, a bunch of great sort of great actors and all these great moments with all these different people. Like, I loved the supporting cast in this movie. I mean, Fred Gwynn as Judge Herman Munster, and Lane Smith, and Bruce McGill, and Austin Pendleton, and Ralph Macchio's mustache. Like, we had all these great supporting roles in this, and I had so much fun watching all these different people interact, because they were all so talented, and they did it all so well, and it made it look really effortless, and I really enjoyed that bit of it.
Mm-hmm. It did remind me what you guys were talking about, like this whole like how did you know Vinny and Lisa end up together. It made me think of the movie Say Anything with John Cusack and Ione Skye, and you know, he asked Diane Court, you know, to this party, and she doesn't go to social function or anything. They show up, and one of the other popular girls is like, "You're here with Lloyd Dobler? How did that happen?" And like, and that's kind of like my thought with like Vinny and Lisa when you first see them together. I'm like, how did that happen? But it shocked me in an endearing way that they actually took the time to have them work through different scenes with a certain level of chemistry to the point where it wasn't unbelievable, which was great. So yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. You would think that it would almost, I hate to say this, but if you didn't see it on paper, you would almost think it would be cringeworthy. And then when you actually watch it, she's doing the part, this is very romantic in the car. And you're just like, they're so cute, you know? And I would have never thought that. So yeah, it's a really good point.
Another thing that I thought of while watching this is that, and again, hear me out. I mean, just the other, was it last week? I can't keep track. We watched Fight Club, and I was saying that it was reminding me of like Wes Anderson romantic comedies, but just darker and more twisted. And watching My Cousin Vinny, it reminded me a bit of Shakespeare. In the
nice,
yeah, but like in the farcical use of language and the misunderstandings and like the audience knows what's happening, but the players don't. And we all just watch it unfold and we're all laughing because we know the inside joke. We know where the miscommunication is about what kind of suit he's going to be wearing and like all all these different things that keep happening. Like when he slips in the mud and falls and his suit gets thrown out the back, we all kind of groan because we know that means something. And it just takes a minute for the real world of the movie to catch up. And like that happens all the time in Shakespeare comedies where you're seeing, sometimes literally physically seeing things unfold and the audience is just giggling in anticipation because you know these two people are going to realize they're not who they thought they were, or that one of them is going to fall off this tree or fall through down the stairway because it's all set up and then they push the dominoes down and it's hilarious. And it's like these things happen. They planted seeds all throughout for different levels and layers of conflict. And then when they go against that grain, it's hilarious. Like when he gets a good night's sleep in the jail, like they set it up like it's just going to be horrible. And it's like, and you're like, oh, this is the ultimate worst. He's not even asleep 2 minutes, but he's sleeping like a baby. And it's like, it works. It's great.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Well, and that prison scene is great too, because it's not like they just, boom, it's on his face and he's passed out. It's like the camera's on the hall or on the corridor and you hear the alarms and the screaming and the rioting and whatever. And then it pans over to Vinny and he's sleeping like a baby. And it's like, that's so
he's
good.
Like, this sounds like the city.
That's such a great use of camera work. Yeah. Exactly. Like, that's probably what it is. He's like, oh, this sounds like hilarious. Brooklyn.
And actually, the camera work is a good thing you brought up, because I was thinking, too, about how it's so filmed to highlight that these two do not belong here. They don't fit in.
Yeah.
When they pull up in that car and they get out and, oh, yeah, you blend. Like, it's immediately clear that they must have taken a wrong turn somewhere, because what are you doing here? But the filming's really great in that regard.
At least I'm wearing cowboy boots.
That's right. She's got her pink camera. Oh my god, it's great.
Oh god, the wardrobe in this is great. Like, you talked about the suit getting thrown out into the mud. That burgundy tux that he shows up to fucking court in afterward is, it's a character in and of itself. It's like, it's just so out there, and he's like this. He almost looks like he's like a maestro of a weird Technicolor orchestra, and. He's showing up to court in this. It's so fantastic.
I love that bunch of dialogue between he and Fred Gwynn, I read they were friends in real life, and that kind of works, because you can tell, even though they're against each other, because just him talking to him and explaining, I wore this for you, it's like, just so, that whole bunch of lines is fantastic.
Yeah, that's, this movie has a lot of payoffs. They work hard at it, and then they build it up, and then you get scenes like the one you just described, which is just one of maybe my top like four in the movie. And and that suit, Anthony, as you said, being its own character, like, I, adding another controversial opinion, I think that suit is played to effect better than the tuxedos in Dumb and Dumber. Like, I think this stands up because it was set up better. It's not just a throwaway joke because it looks funny. Like, it was built in, this idea of needing a dress code and like all the uncomfortableness, and then it crescendos into this suit in that moment, and it was brilliant.
Yeah,
I have to agree with you on that. That's I never even like connected those two threads, but yeah, you're right. Like, that plays so much better than the powder blue and bright orange tuxes from Dumb and Dumber.
Although they are stellar still, we must say.
Oh, yes. No, not discounting that at all. And to be fair, they also come with canes and top hats.
So that is true.
And ruffled shirts.
Yeah, but so actually Vinny's costuming department put him a little bit at a disadvantage, because where was the cane and the top hat?
Yeah, maybe an inferior outfit, but a superior play in the comedy realm.
Ooh,
yes.
Nicely put.
I will definitely concede that, absolutely.
Yeah, that whole too, the whole store's got the flu. My mom and I actually use that line all the time. Like, if we go somewhere and it's like closed and it's weird, and we'll look at each other and be like, the whole store's got the flu. It's so funny.
Today it just kind of, it like hit home a little harder this time around though, because it's just like, this is a literal really thing happening right now. Where like,
oh yeah, I made that connection too.
When that, I first saw the sign, I'm like, I think I've seen that sign. Like, I don't know if it was those exact words or not, but like in Seattle, there's, I work in a little neighborhood called Ballard, and it's got like a main street with tons of little shops, and it's really awesome and great. Except now, I mean, it's starting to reopen a little bit, and there's a few shops open and a few restaurants, but like, for the most part, it's still all closed off. And like, mm-hmm. as you're walking down the street, you know, and you just see these signs, and a lot of them are just variations on, you know, store has flu, you know, or whatever that the actual sign was in this.
The whole store's got the flu. That's actually a really good point. Watching this movie now makes that more interesting. Good catch. I'm the idiot who didn't even think of that. That's so funny.
Yeah. You were too close. You were too close. That's to, you had right. to step back.
Reuniting with all my friends in Alabama. That's the other thing, too.
Stole a can of tuna fish.
They play, oh my gosh, just the stupid tuna. They play the cultural, geographical, regional differences so well, too. And as a Jersey girl who now lives in Florida, and I love where I live, and it's beautiful, and it's certainly not the Deep South, but just the differences, and not that either one is better or worse than the other, but just the fact that they're just totally not seeing eye to eye at first, for sure, on anything. Because it's just they come from totally different places. I love that thread throughout the movie.
No. that whole Yankee in the South thing, mm-hmm. I mean, you would think it's like a played out thing because it's done, especially probably the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, like that was a fairly common trope. They didn't like it played well and didn't seem to be derivative of that thing. You know what I mean?
Right. Yes, good point. Yeah, you're right. It wasn't like, oh, this again. It actually worked. And I, of course, as somebody who likes to pretend I do a Mona Lisa Vito impression, I love the different accents, too. You know, you've got your super New York and then your super Southern. And it's just, it's really fun to watch.
Speaking of transitions, Beth, I wanted to ask your thoughts on things because I believe you are an attorney at law. Is that correct?
I am an attorney at law, in fact. Yes, I am.
How many, if it's not too personal, did it take you 6 times to pass the bar exam? More or less.
I did better than Vinny. And here's the super fun tidbit. I am officially bar admitted in New York and New Jersey. And you know what, Vinny? I passed on the first try. So there you go.
Oh, shots fired. Oof.
Although I'm gonna be nice now that I was mean. I'm like Sour Patch Kids. I'm sour that I'm sweet. Because here comes the sweet part. I will say one thing I like about the movie, and I have to thank you guys again for having me on the show because I learned in looking at the, God bless IMDb trivia, I learned in looking at the trivia to sort of have some modicum of knowledge beyond what I already know about the movie, that the director, Jonathan Lynn, he actually has a law degree. So he wanted the legal, He wanted the legal proceedings to be pretty legit, like they could actually happen in reality, and they do a pretty good job. But what I'm getting to is that I think the movie actually does highlight, here's the part where a bunch of lawyers I know get mad at me and I don't care, but it does highlight that a lot of practicing law is not about necessarily your book smarts. You obviously can't be an idiot, but it's not always about your book smarts. It's sometimes just about can you, and whether it's, you know, I do corporate law, but whether it's courtroom or corporate or whatever kind of law you're in, it's often about just kind of your savvy and your ability to pay attention and to observe and then to bring that all together and your communicative abilities. Because once Vinny gets going and he's out there and he's doing his thing out there, she says, he really kills it. He kills it. And nobody cares that he took 6 times to pass the bar. So I really enjoyed that kind of lesson, I guess, is that, you know, you don't have to be the guy who passed the bar on the first try, which makes me sad because I did. But, you know, you can still knock it out as an attorney. And I thought that, you know, I haven't watched this movie like closely and paid close attention, I don't think, since I've been really working as an attorney. And so that was super fun because I was like, yeah, you know, like that's true in life too, when you're practicing law, if you're paying attention.
Well, and they foreshadow that a little bit because you get, sorry John, I'll let you go in a second, you get Billy.
I know, I always forget Billy. Should be like Tony or something.
And Billy and Stan talking about, like, should we go with Vinny or should we go with the public defender? Mm-hmm. And Billy's making a case for Vinny about, like, the magician and how he saw through the whole act and everything like that. Yep. And, like, that's that foreshadowing of it.
Yeah, it's a good point. John. Exactly.
Yeah, I was going to, I mean, just to kind of bounce off of where you're going with that as well, just I like the fact that when I watched this, I wasn't forced to be distracted about whether it was realistic or, I mean, being a comedy, mm-hmm. like, I was already relaxed enough anyway, but, like, some of the conflict going on were, like, people against themselves and not against yeah. the law, but the law as it's being interpreted through different personalities. And, like, even the conflict with the judge, like, that wasn't saying, like, it, there was a statement of the judge kind of rules the courtroom, and if you're not pleasing them, you can throw you in contempt, and all these things can happen. And but there can still be a sense of fairness if you match decorum, and maybe some judges care more than others. So you have to be able mm-hmm. to adapt to the moment. You have to read the room. You have to, you know, if you want to be successful, you have to know the jury. You have to know the, mm-hmm. the culture, everything you're surrounded in. And so, like, it definitely, like, all the times that we keep seeing Vinny fail, in, especially in the early going, and Lisa's there to keep essentially pushing him on, finding, like, she's what holds the movie together. She holds him together. Mm-hmm. She builds him up. And eventually, like, by just kind of giving him that support and like, backbone, he eventually gets through some of the nerves, learns how to adapt enough culturally mm-hmm. that he can communicate in the right language, and then he's able to, you know, towards the end, he just gets on a roll and he uses his magician, you know, skills where he's able to pick apart what a magician is. But he does that, you know, with people and their arguments, and you know, just that whole process was very satisfying. It was predictable, but it was super satisfying. I loved it. And of course, it all leads up to the ultimate, which is when Lisa takes the stand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Which that obviously it's supposed to be, but like the best scene in the movie, like starting off with her like berating him in front of the judge and like yeah. just being a pain in the ass when he's trying yes. to ask her questions, and then it turning into this, no wait, this is it's not that car, it's this car, mm-hmm. and like that's that whole epiphany that she has, and her just spouting off, and then the sheriff coming in and saying, yep, they picked up the two guys, they were driving the Pontiac, whatever it
Tempest.
Was. At the Tempest, yes.
Mint green.
Mint
That's
green.
That's right. That's right.
And, like, the that entire payoff was very satisfying, but the whole scene itself was very much enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love too that brings back again where Vinny not only doesn't really get annoyed when she's a pain like that, he kind of likes it. Like, that's their dynamic. Yeah. He gets a kick out of her. And then he can't wait for her to prove her knowledge and for everybody to go like, whoa, I did not expect that to come out of her. And so
he doesn't watch this.
Yeah, exactly. That's great. Yeah. And she also has some of the best faces in that scene. The way she looks at people. Oh my gosh, it's great.
And she's cute, too, huh? Yeah.
He's just so proud of her and, like, in awe of her. It's so funny. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's clear he worships her, but, like, that fighting dynamic, the arguing, that being their life. And, like they said with the two what's-her-faces in jail when they were, like, oh, you know, my parents or whatever argue, but and he's like, no, you don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, and that's just that whole idea of like, no, it's on a different level. And like, mm-hmm. when they're arguing about the water faucet, that's another foreshadowing of like that back and forth with them, like that
yeah.
that he has that ability mm-hmm. to turn a phrase into, you know, kind of work through. He's not an idiot, you know, he just right. is out of water.
Yeah, yes. But at the same time, you could totally see them as a couple in the middle of Brooklyn with him standing out in the street and she's in their third floor walk up and there's the two of them are screaming at each other,
yes.
arguing, and she's throwing shit at him out the window.
Yes. And they're loving yep. it. It's not like, you know, they're like, oh, I wish my relationship was easier. It's like, this is exactly what
they
I want.
Oh, yeah. They'll kiss and make up 20 minutes later.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. It's great. I love it. I'm a Columbo and my dad's from Brooklyn. So I love this movie because I kind of get it. Oh, it's great.
Now, I think one of the things that our audience is probably, whether they know it or not, just hungering for is to see, of the three of us, who really does bring the best Mona Lisa and, you know, impersonation to the table. Because I gotta say, in the opening, before we even watched the movie, Beth brought a pretty impressive debut, but see, here's the weird thing here. And again, this happens so much when we watch movies that I almost think there's a conspiracy, but like about halfway to the movie, every once in a while, the audio got all jumbled. And instead of Marissa Tomei, it's like they dubbed in a different voice. It was almost Scottish, somewhat like English, Irish. It was so hard to pin down exactly, but it was a male voice. And I was like, what is this about? And I thought, well, maybe I can lean on other impressions that I do flawlessly, because that's how I heard, especially in the end. And that one court scene, I think you all remember, when you see Marissa Tomei take the stand, and she's going through and explaining, and then, you know, and they say, is that a trick question? And, you know, why is that a trick question? And then all of a sudden, this is the voice you heard. You heard, of course, Chevy didn't make a 327.55. And I was like, what? That's a flawless Sean Connery voice I'm hearing as Mona Lisa Vita? I'd like, that was, for me, a bit difficult to, like, comprehend, but I just thought I'd bring that to the table. I don't know what you have prepared, Anthony, but that's what I heard. What did you hear?
Well, did you watch it on Stars? Because that's what I heard when I watched it on Stars.
Was it European Stars?
Oh, European Stars. Oh, maybe
it was. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, European. In fact, we watch most of our movies on European Stars, apparently, because this comes up more than you'd imagine.
That was a very good Sean Connery, by the way, I have to say. But everyone sounds like Sean Connery on European Stars. It's a well-known fact.
I guess that's true. Yeah, that's why, because I believe it or not, one or two people have once indicated that maybe the Sean Connery impersonation is not the best. But you know what? I bet they don't ever watch European Stars.
Exactly.
So they're like, they're culturally illiterate. That's the problem.
We could always just put the South Park disclaimer at the top of this podcast that we don't make any representation that these are good. We're just, you know, having fun. Yeah.
Oh, man. Having fun. I agree.
But I liked it. I thought it was good. I want to be on record. I liked it. I thought it was good.
John, you're not going to make me actually do a Mona Lisa Vito quote, are you?
Come on.
No. Trying to impersonate. Of course I wouldn't make you do that. I don't have that sort of power. I couldn't just sit here and keep talking on and on and on until you gave in and actually did something. I wouldn't just keep talking like this, which would be horribly annoying.
Because Chevy didn't make a 327.55. The 327 didn't come out till 62. And it wasn't offered in the Bel Air and the fourth barrel carb until 64. However, in 1964, the correct ignition timing would be 4 degrees above top dead center.
Pretty good.
That was the exact combination that's going to give me nightmares of Sean Connery and Marissa Tomei. Just genetically blended into
Marissa
one.
Marissa Tomei is weeping.
Oh, God.
That was something.
I'm sorry, Ms. Tomei. I still love you.
You're just doing a little gender bending as Mona Lisa Vito. It's got weird. We just got weird.
Oh, goodness.
You had the accent. That's really the most important.
My cousin Vinny just got weird. I never thought I'd hear those lines in 2020.
Yeah. Well, 2020, anything goes. So my cousin Vinny can get weird.
Oh, you asked for it. That's what you wanted.
Thank you.
I think we all acquitted ourselves nicely. Pun on acquitted. Very much intended.
Yes.
Oh! Hey, I'm here all week.
That was a law joke for our lesser law savvy audience members.
Yes, if you failed the bar 6 times, you can look up the word acquit at thelegaldictionary.com.
I don't quit.
Was that a Vinny impersonation?
Yeah, it was supposed to be.
That was really, really good.
Thank you. I didn't think it went well, but...
I hold you and myself to different standards.
Yes, always. That's so true. I feel the same way. I'm like everybody else. I'm like, that's amazing. And then I do something. I'm like, that is the worst thing I've ever heard.
In all seriousness, John and I, we talked after we recorded the first part of the show, and... We both said, like, initially, we thought that it was a recording from the movie. Like, not that you were, like, for half a second, like, oh, shit, that's, like, just Marissa Tomei.
Oh, that's crazy.
You did a flawless Mona Lisa Vito.
Oh, that's crazy. Thank you.
One of Joe Pesci's better comedies, no?
Does he have others?
He does.
I mean, you're forgetting Home Alone.
I mean,
Home
Alone. And that is probably up there with this one, but I mean, a couple of others, his role as Leo in Lethal Weapon. I wanted to punch him every time he was on screen.
Right. Which was perfect.
And he was in a movie called Gone Fishing with Danny Glover that was a comedy, but wasn't very funny.
Ooh.
Hmm.
So yeah, at least from my recollection.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I will as well.
Okay.
That's always a shame when it's supposed to be funny and you're just like, it's not working.
Yeah, well, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is definitely up there with his. I mean, he's brilliant in it. I always focused on Mona Lisa Vito just because I always had fun, you know, doing the impression, and it was, you know, she's the woman. Sure. And stuff. But watching it this time, I was just like, he is so brilliant. It's just great. And the way that every line he's so into, like when she does the biological clock thing, and then he's coming back at her with, what else can we add on this pile? It's just so great.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. I know we keep going back to it, but the way that they go back and forth, and they're constantly nipping at each other, but they give it as good as they can get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. I love it.
Maybe it was a bad time to bring it up. That was another Mona Lisa Vito impersonation after the whole biological clock thing. Remember that one?
Oh yeah, maybe yes.
European stars.
Right, European stars confused me, and I forgot.
Yeah,
really bad time to bring that.
You all know what I'm nervous about. I'll tell you what I'm nervous about. I'm in the dark here with all this legal crap. I have no idea what's going on. All I know is you're screwing up, and I can't help. Apparently.
Imagine though, seriously imagine this movie dubbed as like British, and then there could be like Cockney in there. Like, it would be so funny. I've got a project.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I think we've just uncovered a gold mine.
Lisa, I don't need this. I swear to God, I do not need this right now, okay?
It's like Michael Caine is dubbed over Mona Lisa Vito. Like, what the fuck?
Why
not? What is Paul's attraction?
Yeah. What is Paul's attraction, Mr. Wine?
Oh my gosh, that's great.
I mean, I guess we could probably make this our longest episode ever and just tack on another hour and 40 minutes of us going through and reading.
Doing bad impersonations.
I mean, I just think that's one of the best uses of our time I can imagine.
Oh man, this is our table read in British English of the film classic My Cousin Vinny.
Oh, the we remember English, being British.
Yes. Oh my gosh. You know, I did find out in my extensive research, meaning I looked at IMDb and IMDb only, I did learn that the exchange between the prosecutor and the expert, Is that Babe's dad? Whoever that guy, you know, that was actually from, that was verbatim taken from an actual court transcript. So when the guys asked how he analyzed, he says, I have a dual column gas, Cremaret, blah, 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 Hewlett Packard, blah, blah, blah. That was from a court transcript, which I thought was kind of cool because it's yet another part where the movie does hold up in terms of the legal stuff. And like you were saying, you don't have to be distracted about how it's really ridiculous. But I thought that was so interesting because it actually came from a court transcript. So, and they even had the part about, does that thing come turbocharged? And he says, only on the floor models. Like, that joke or whatever was even in the court transcript. So I thought that was kind of fun.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I thought that was a fun tidbit.
That's a classic Jerry Callow move.
Jerry Callow with a C.
Yeah, that's another one, too, where she's way ahead of him because he's going, I guess you didn't read the article. She's like, you're an idiot. He's dead. Yeah. And I love him because he saw the headlines. This guy's making headlines and he's awesome, but didn't think to click and go like, it's because he died. So I noticed something else that was, this is weird. It's kind of a stretch, but I was like, this is kind of true, though. They kind of do a lot with the senses. So, like, sound, because all the hotel thing is hilarious, going through all the hotels, and he just wants to, like, kill everyone. She's supposed to come through at 10 to 4. that's great. And then, obviously, sight, you know, the suits, and we talked about the burgundy suit, and that's a treat for the eyes, and all that kind of stuff. And then taste from, like, the grits perspective, which I have never understood grits. I live in Florida now. These people are obsessed with grits. grits. I don't get it. I've tried them. I've tried to get it. I don't get it. So I feel you, Vinny. But just, I feel like there was a lot done with, like, you were using a lot of your senses to watch the movie. It wasn't just watching. You could smell stuff. You could hear stuff, you know. So I thought that that was kind of interesting because I obviously never noticed that before, but I was watching it going, this is kind of a, it's a treat for all the senses.
But, like, it's very interesting. Like, that in and of itself, that's an interesting observation. But to once again circle back to the very beginning where you're doing the whole imagine your idea, like that whole thing, like,
right,
then, like, you're given this vivid mm-hmm. picture for the senses of, you know, you get thirsty, so you imagine being mm-hmm. thirsty, you see a little brook, you put your deer lips on it, you're touching yep. it, like, good, it's just point. It's like a bam.
Yeah.
But, like,
we know the so rest.
it's really great. Like, there you feel like you go through all the different senses and you really are along. It takes you a part of the ride. Like, the visceral reaction of someone who, you know, most of us can relate to when you haven't slept a lot or something's keeping mm-hmm. you up or whatever it might be, and to have it keep happening and like how to be frustrated, to be sleep deprived, to have all these things going on, and then to get stuck in the mud, and then to, you know, like, the just the different levels of stress and like that physical
pigs getting
feeling.
Loaded up into a truck.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, I've woken up in weird positions before where everything hurts because I was sitting up or leaning weird. And to imagine mm-hmm. only sleeping 45 minutes, being stuck in the mud, not having time barely to shower or get clothes, putting on a horrible suit that feels weird, like all of those things, I can feel like that was happening. So that's really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to your point about the Shakespeare thing, you feel it with them because we're often ahead of them, like you were saying. But then you also, because one thing I love about Shakespeare, even the comedies, is like there are human beings, you know, you feel that they're more, you know, they're multidimensional, and you can, so it's that kind of thing too, like you're saying, you just, like you said, when that suit hits the mud, you're like, oh no. Which is, it's fun to feel yeah. along with the character.
No, and I even think I said, like, when that suit hit the mud, I think I actually out loud said, oh no.
Yeah, because you're like, he's going to be in so much trouble. I also like that as an attorney, I do enjoy the part where he's trying to, she tried to get the money, but she got hustled. So they go to confront JT, who's a charmer. And two things about that scene, more than two, but the two I'm thinking of right now. One, obviously just his whole, like, mocking the guy through going, you know, that's a counter offer. We like that whole thing's hilarious. And then I love the part, because it's such a slam on attorneys, which I can appreciate, where he's trying desperately to get a lawsuit out of that guy who got hurt. And he tries one more time on the way out. Do you fall at your place or someone else's? My place. And he's like, you know, shit. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is great.
the scene with Neck Brace is great, and JT, and then just how the same scene where, like, he has less than 10 minutes to get ready to go to court, and JT's outside of the hotel, and he's like, I got you $200 here. And Vinny just fucking had enough, and he's like, fuck it, you're done, and knocks his ass out.
His
and takes the money.
Bad timing.
Just jumps. He jumps 2 feet into the air to be able to hit him in the mouth. Like, the visual on that.
It's brilliant.
Which, yeah, obviously a very big, short joke. No, I guess pun intended. Like, that was a fantastic bit that they did there.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was.
So normally we would finish out the show with a question. However, I have two. So I'm going to ask it and you can each answer. And I'll answer as well. Underrated Joe Pesci role.
The most underrated?
I guess maybe favorite underrated.
I almost, this is a weird answer, but I almost feel like it is Home Alone, just because I totally forgot that till you said it, because you're so focused on, you know, Kevin and everybody else that's sort of like, so they become kind of like the guys that are challenging Kevin, and they're both hilarious, you know, Fred Savage's older voice in The Wonder Years, come on, they're both amazing, but you just, like, you don't think of them as much as you think of the kid, you know? So, like, I don't know.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if that's the best answer, but I totally forgot about that until you said it before, and I was like, oh my gosh, That's Pesci.
That's a totally valid answer, though.
We have a time-honored tradition here where Anthony asks a question, and out of like 50 possible answers, I pick the one that he was going to pick, or he picks the one that I was going to pick. So now
it's
my turn.
He's going to do it now.
I'm going to give my answer. I'm going to give my answer, and I'm hoping I steal Anthony's thunder by saying what he was going to say, which is Simon and With Honors.
No.
Oh.
No, but a good answer.
I don't know if I should be happy or sad. Yeah.
No, I was going to say Tommy and Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag.
Ah.
I remember seeing that. Like, I would get home from school and it would be on HBO, and I would just, you know, I'd watch that because it was funny, like having these singing heads inside of a duffel bag. Like, so no, all good answers all around. This one will be maybe a little bit easier. You all pass, yes.
Thank God.
And so did I.
First
try. For me.
Hey.
Favorite Marissa Tomei role. That is not Mike. That is not Mona Lisa Vito and My Cousin Vinny.
This one, that's a good one. Man, I really put all my eggs in the Marissa Tomei as Mona Lisa Vito basket. Oh, I forgot about this. Is a crazy one. I forgot that she's the like kind of thirsty girl in What Women Want with Mel Gibson. I forgot.
Hell
about
yeah.
That. Oh my gosh, that wouldn't be my favorite role of hers, but she was good as always. the desperate version.
I feel like it would almost be too easy to say The Wrestler because she was awesome in that, and I want to go a little bit weirder than that. Weird not meaning like independent or, you know, unheard of, but just I really like her as Aunt May in the more recent Spider-Man movies. I think that she's just she's a lot of fun and like, you know, it's a tiny little part, but I think she plays it great. And so as far as just enjoying a performance, I think that she's just a lot of fun with that. I'm not going to say Untamed Heart because that's, you know, too cheesy of a movie.
You guys are going to drum me out of the movie club because I don't even think I've seen many of her other movies, which is horrible. I have homework to do. But I think I was just so focused. I was so loyal to Mona Lisa Vito. It's like I will not watch her do anything else. No, I missed all her other movies.
That's fair.
That feels like a travesty.
That's fine.
Sorry, Marissa.
It is what it is. So my answer was Natalie in War, Inc. It's a lesser known movie, but it was that whole movie is a lot of fun to watch anyway. But she was really good in it. She's also good in Rescue Me, the firefighter show.
I feel like she'd be perfect in that kind of genre, you know, and kind of gritty and city.
Oh yeah, for sure.
She always brings it, which I can appreciate.
Yeah, she does. She's always like she never phones it in.
Right.
It's never like a half-assed job from her. She knows what she's there to do and she does it. So
yep,
she's like the opposite of me. Oh wait, that didn't quite well, you know. What's that is said.
It is what it is.
I said what I said.
Thank you all so much for listening. And thank you, Beth Colombo, for joining us this week on our episode on My Cousin Vinny. Where can our audience find you? Do you have anything to plug? How do we see you in the real world?
Yeah. Hey, thanks for asking. I don't exist. No, I'm just kidding. first, thank you guys
so
much.
This has been our first AI episode, everyone.
Yes, exactly. I'm a very advanced robot. No, thank you guys so much for having me on. This was a blast. And yeah, I'm a sort of addicted to, for better or worse, the whole social media space. So you can find me there on Instagram. I'm at, ready for this, this is super on the nose, I'm at Lawyer Lizzie Writes, which is, you know, call me Beth or Liz, and there's that. And then Twitter, I'm Lawyer Lizzie. Got really creative on that one. And then my Facebook page and LinkedIn, I go super official with Elizabeth Colombo. So you can find me at any of those. And then you'll know if I have a project coming up. How's that?
That works perfectly. Again, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you all so much for listening to us each and every week. We release new episodes every Monday. So come and hang out with us each and every week as we distill another favorite from our past.
Now, one of the things that we always like to talk about at the end of our podcast is whether or not I'm the individual who headlines the group Semaphore and wrote the song Destroying the Evidence that we use in our podcast. I'm not going to say that I am the mastermind behind that, but you all can make your own decisions. You've heard some of the vocal stylings that I present, especially when I, you know, I'm singing the Pixies or, you know,
so however John, that shakes John, out. John, 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 John,
yeah.
John. Beth, can you give your legal opinion on this? Can he legally make that claim?
Well, you know, you might be sued by multiple people, so just watch out.
No. I'm not going to let this go. Hold on a second.
Be careful. Are you
stating right now, we're going to get a classic argument. Are you saying that I am not allowed to say that I'm not going to say I'm the person who is that lead singer of Semaphore who wrote Stirring Evidence? Because I'm clearly saying I'm not going to say I am. Am I leading the witnesses? You know, that's what's happening.
Yeah, you're playing some semantics here, John, and I think that Fred Gwynne would eat you alive right now.
and hold you in contempt.
Yeah, you'd be in jail with Vinny. Yep, yep.
Okay.
I think you're safe. I'm just
again,
messing with
the band of Semaphore. the song's Stirring the Evidence, and you guys should check them out because we love it so much. We always put it on our podcast to introduce the show. And as always, any of you guys want to reach out to us, please email us at thememorydistillery@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at TMDpod. Our Instagram's also at TMDpod. And mostly, we just want to hear your thoughts and opinions, what you'd like us to do next, who really has the best Mona Lisa Vito impersonation. Join us in the discussion on Facebook. It's getting pretty active there, so it's a lot of fun. And once again, just like Anthony, I'd like to thank Beth for joining us. And thank you all for listening. I'm John Deck.
I'm Beth Colombo. Thank you guys for having me. It's been fun.
And I'm Anthony Veneri, and this has been The Memory Distillery. Stay classy, Wazoo.
Stay
Alabama.
Classy. What? Well, my biological clock is ticking here.
Okay, I'll do one more. I routinely twist maximum allowable torque. That's how I'm going out. I'm going out like that.